Care Talk with Laura Packard is a podcast covering healthcare in America from a progressive perspective. Our healthcare system is broken, and we all know insurance companies are out of control. If you don't have health insurance or don't understand the differences between insurance plans or have surprise medical bills, out-of-control prescription drug costs, or can't get the care you need, listen to Care Talk with Laura Packard weekly on Tuesdays. What's going to happen to your healthcare under the Trump administration? From prescription drug prices to health insurance costs, from healthcare for seniors and people with disabilities to reproductive care, from care for veterans to public health, including vaccinations. Healthcare experts answer your questions every week, and they go in-depth on Medicare, Medicaid, the Affordable Care Act, private insurance, and more. Go to healthcarevoices.org/caretalk or search for Care Talk with Laura Packard on your favorite podcast app to listen today.
Our press secretary gave alternative facts to that.
My goal in this deposition was to be truthful, but not particularly helpful.
Welcome to Unspun, the podcast that makes you better at finding the truth. The way people get news is changing. It used to be that there were many reporters who would research stories and write articles, but now politicians and famous people share information directly with you on social media and the internet. That means you find out things fast, but it's up to you to make sure the information's actually accurate. And newsmakers don't always do their part. The temptation to manipulate information is strong. They bend the truth to deceive so that they can avoid accountability, so that they can advance their agendas. When you recognize these agendas, you can sometimes find out what's real. And we're at a crossroads where anyone can share anything online, so it's important to sharpen your critical thinking skills. Finding that deception before it goes viral is pretty much a survival skill now, and we're going to do it together. Let's get unspun. Hello, truth seekers, and welcome to this week's Unspun. Today, I hope you can imagine me saying as I push my glasses up with a finger, well, actually, correlation doesn't equal causation. On this week's episode, we're going to look at what this actually means. Here's some examples of how newsmakers get it wrong and how to check your own thinking when you hear about things. And then, I wanted to talk about a communication theory that was really controversial when I was in graduate school, but that I think explains a lot about how people use media today. Sound good? Let's get Unspun. Before we do, I wanted to remind you that Unspun has a completely free newsletter on Substack. I only publish when I have something to say, but it's where you can get additional examples that go with the episodes. If you're interested, free subscriptions are available at theunspunpodcast.substack.com. All right, let's go. Study results can be hard to interpret, even more so when you're talking about big social trends. But one mistake people make a lot is assuming that because two things happen at the same time, they must be related. Now, nerdy folk will call this confusing correlation and causation, but I think it's easier to just think of it as an example of false cause. It's a simple concept that can really affect how we understand the world around us, so let's get into it. Correlation describes when two things change together. They move in sync, and if you put it on a graph, it would be like parallel lines. Causation, however, means one thing explicitly creates or triggers another. It makes it happen. An example I give my students is bicycle theft and ice cream sales. Did you know that every year they both go up at the same time? Now, I can do some mental gymnastics to try to prove that there's a relationship. Maybe people overeat ice cream and they realize they're getting fat, so they steal a bicycle so they can get some exercise. So ice cream sales cause bicycle theft. Or maybe it's the other way around. People want to eat ice cream and the store is far away, so they steal a nearby bicycle to get there. Ice cream sales cause bicycle theft. Those are obviously just dumb. So I asked my students, what's really going on here? As temperatures rise, ice cream sales increase. And it's also easier to bike places when you aren't doing it in the snow. So the hot weather likely causes both. And so this illustrates the false cause. You'd think smart people are immune to these kind of thinking mistakes, but you'd be wrong. A StatsWiz author named Tyler Vigen published a whole and pretty funny book about false correlations. And one of his examples is about margarine and divorce. According to his analysis of Centers for Disease Control and U.S. Department of Agriculture data, over time, as the people of Maine ate less margarine, the divorce rate decreased. An AI-generated summary on Vigen's website offers the following explanation, quote, "Perhaps as people used less margarine, they became less slippery in their relationships. The lack of artificial spread may have kept the couples from buttering each other up, leading to a decrease in overall marital strife. That's the reality when you can't believe it's not butter. It's a recipe for marital success. Alternatively, it could be that as the margarine consumption decreased, so did the overall stickiness in the state, leading to fewer instances of partners feeling like they couldn't grip the marriage. And the end of the quote. All jokes aside, this correlation was likely a coincidence reflecting big societal changes in demographics, economy, or culture. And a once again relevant example involves the discredited study linking vaccines to autism. A belief based on a study so flawed that the paper was retracted and the author lost his ability to practice medicine. Published in 1998, this really flawed research suggested a connection between childhood vaccines and autism spectrum disorders. And it was comprehensively debunked and it was retracted, but the study has created lasting public misconceptions that were even in the news here in the U.S. this week. The Children's Hospital of Philadelphia explained that the study claimed that vaccines caused intestinal inflammation that led to autism. But the doctors found the intestinal symptoms after the autism diagnosis, meaning that there can't be a cause there. The damage was done, though, and the paper led to decreased vaccinations and resurgence of preventable diseases. So why do people believe stuff like this? Essentially, our brains are wired to find patterns, and this let our ancestors survive by quickly identifying important relationships that help them find things like predator movements or food sources. As a legacy of that time, our brains naturally seek patterns, often creating connections where none really exist. And this tendency makes understanding the difference between correlation and causation not just an academic exercise, but a critical thinking skill. Fortunately, you can get better by learning scientific thinking about relationships. First, you have to know when you're not only looking at two things, that there aren't lurking variables like the hot weather when it comes to ice cream and bicycles. You should also have a control group, one in which the thing you think caused the other doesn't change. If you can track things over a long period of time, that also helps, because time is truly the important factor. You can only say one thing caused thing two if thing one happened first. So let's listen to a couple of clips for this week's warm-up. The first clip is former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who was asked to explain about inflation on our TV news show.
Okay, let's talk about inflation. First of all, a few things. Inflation, what causes inflation? One is when unemployment goes down, inflation goes up. That's not anything to accept. When wages go up, inflation goes up.
Here's a claim she makes about part of a larger answer of why prices are so high. What she says is that in general, low unemployment leads to high inflation, and she's implying that because the U.S. has low unemployment at the time, that was the reason that prices were high. Now, that is a correlation, and it's a true correlation. But the real explanation for high prices tends to be a lot more complicated. You know, economists still think there's truth to this idea, but it can be an oversimplification that leaves out some things. And a whole bunch of real-world experience has shown that that connection between unemployment and inflation isn't very exact. Sometimes, even when very few people are out of work, prices don't go up as much as the theory would suggest. There's other things that can be more important than the old idea about jobs and prices. For example, supply shocks, which are unexpected events that suddenly affect the supply of goods, like maybe a natural disaster where things are manufactured or a big change in oil prices. Productivity gains are another one, and so these are improvements in how much stuff workers can make in a certain period of time, which can help keep prices stable. Globalization can be another, when businesses and other organizations start operating on a global scale, and that can affect prices and jobs as well. And these factors can be more important than a relationship between the number of jobs and inflation. So that makes that old theory less useful for understanding today's economy. Now, Pelosi was not wrong to suggest that there was a relationship, but it was not great to imply that one causes the other. Let's listen to another example.
So this bill actually prevents against local governments defunding law enforcement. We'll be able to stop it at the state level. And if you look at some of these places that have done this, they've already seen crime go up, even just diverting some of the funding to this. And so it's an insane theory. It's not going to be allowed to ever carry the day in the state of Florida.
That's Florida Governor Ron DeSantis at a press conference after he signed a crime bill into law. And among other things, the new law lets state folks challenge city budget proposals that might reduce police funding, leaving a final decision made by the governor and the cabinet. Now, DeSantis says that there are places where police budgets were cut and crime rates have gone up. His office gave 6 specific examples of cities like New York and Minneapolis. But across the examples, it was different types of crime and it was different time periods that they measured as well. So that's not really a good base to even put a correlation on. But what wasn't considered was the fact that murder and gun violence were already rising before the cities changed their budget, so that time factor isn't there. Some of the examples had voted to change budgets, had not yet moved the money. And most importantly, cities that didn't cut their police budgets also saw their murder rates go up. You definitely need more evidence to argue that budget changes caused crime increases. I need to take a quick break, but when I come back, we're going to look at one possible reason why some TV networks and social media accounts make it look like the world is just a terrible place. I'll be right back. Welcome back. So you ever get that, like, weird feeling? Maybe after you binge-watch a show, if it's all crime drama, suddenly you're checking your locks twice? Well, today I'm diving deep on whether TV actually changes how you see the world, especially when it comes to politics. I've got some research here looking at 2 big ideas, cultivation theory and selective exposure. Now, one study found that people who watch a ton of TV, they actually think the world is way more dangerous than it actually is, and researchers call this the mean world syndrome. But you can also look at how the type of TV you watch matters. So for example, local news can make you think about how to avoid cancer and become fatalistic about that. And it makes you think, right, that watching media is not just mindless entertainment. It can actually shape some important beliefs that you hold. And that's where this whole echo chamber thing comes in. If you feel like everything you see is opinions that agree with yours, that might be selective exposure. But first, let's talk about cultivation theory. Basically, it says that the more media you watch, the more your views start to match up with what you see on the screen. The key here, though, is that it's not about instant effects. You know, it's more of a slow drip, drip, drip kind of thing. Like watching certain types of shows can really color your worldview. It's not like everyone who watches a lot of video is walking around terrified, but the trend is measurable. So to find that out, researchers used surveys and analysis to compare different groups of viewers to look for patterns, and they also tried to account for things that might already make someone feel safe or unsafe, you know, like if they had been the actual victim of a crime or if they live in a place with a high crime rate. So, you know, it's not just a straight line from watching TV to feeling scared. You can't necessarily say that one causes the other, right? It might be a false cause if you did, but you can see how they're related. Now, like any scientific theory, cultivation has been challenged and refined over the years. And in fact, when I was in graduate school, it was a really, really hot debate topic that even affected the people that we considered for jobs at the university I went to. Some critics say it's too simplistic and it doesn't account for all the ways people process information because we're smart, right? We think for ourselves, we talk to people, and we have real life experiences that shape our views. So there's a lot more to it. Also, the first cultivation studies were done on television, and obviously we have a lot more choices now, internet, social media, video games. So as we've seen increasing polarization, people are also looking at different information sources. So let's move on to the other big idea, selective exposure. This is about how we actively choose information we pay attention to, what social media accounts we follow, what TV we watch, what podcasts we listen to, and we do this often based on what we already believe. So think about, have you ever scrolled past a news article just because the headline kind of rubbed you the wrong way? Or maybe you go back to certain YouTube channels or podcasts that just don't match your own political views? Selective exposure basically means we gravitate toward information that confirms what we already think. The problem is, it can make it really hard to understand people who think differently. If all you hear is one perspective, it can become easy to start thinking, well, everyone agrees with me, and anyone who doesn't, they're just wrong. And sometimes they are wrong, but you still have to live with them. So trying to at least understand what they think is probably not a bad idea. Selective exposure can really feed into polarization. You know, it makes us less likely to compromise or even listen to another side. So instead of debate, we just talk to people who agree with us and pat each other on the back. Here's an example. Imagine 2 people, right? One loves candidate A and the other one can't stand them. And so they both see the exact same news report about the candidate, but walk away with completely different understandings. Like they're seeing the same information through different lenses. The person who already likes candidate A will zero in on the positive parts of the report, while the person who dislikes them will only remember those negative little details. And that can make talking about politics a nightmare. You're basically starting from 2 completely different realities. And that's where selective exposure really packs a punch. You might even start dismissing any information that challenges your view as totally biased or fake news. And I'm going to bet that you have thought that other people do this and you've been critical of those people. But I can tell you, just because of the way that people work, it is likely that you also do this. Okay, we've seen how selective exposure can mess with how we see political candidates. What about how it affects actual voting? Well, research suggests that media we choose to consume definitely influences who we vote for. If you constantly get your news from a source that leans toward one party, you're more likely to vote for that party, even if you don't realize it swung you. And it's not like some brainwashing thing, but the information you shape sees how you see the world, which shapes your choices. So, if you wanted to be an informed voter, you might want to try to break out of your little bubble and expose yourself to different perspectives. Now, you definitely could come back to what you originally believe, but it is good to have all the information to make a good choice. Being aware of your emotions can also help you be a better reader of news. So, remember that cultivation theory suggests that long-term exposure to certain media can shape your overall worldview. Like, if you listen to a lot of true crime podcasts, you might start thinking your own world is more dangerous than it really is. And selective exposure can actually make those effects stronger. Imagine someone who already believes the world is dangerous. They're probably more likely to seek out information that confirms that belief. So they listen to more true crime podcasts or they watch crime dramas on TV. They click through to articles when they describe violent events, and they spend time on social media groups about safety and crime. And so their beliefs keep getting reinforced. It's like a vicious cycle. So as you can see, selective exposure can make cultivation even stronger. But could it also ever reduce the effects? Some research suggests it's possible, particularly for people who have reactance. Reactance is what I talked about on my last episode of Unspun. It basically means you hate being told what to think. People with high reactance tend to resist any attempts to persuade them. You can apply this to media messages too. If they're watching shows that are trying to push a particular viewpoint, they're actually more likely to reject it because they don't like being told what to think. They might actually get annoyed by it. And you can think of maybe people who hate watch certain newsmakers or influencers because they don't like being told what to think. They're using selective exposure as a kind of a shield, protecting them from being influenced by the content. This is a pretty new area of research, and we definitely don't know everything about how personality plays into media effects, but it's really interesting to think about. And it's not just crime and politics where this matters. There's research about a connection between watching local TV news and feeling fatalistic about cancer. So studies have shown that people who watch a lot of local TV news are more likely to think they just can't do much to lower their chances of getting cancer. They think it's just luck, so there's no point in trying to prevent it. And this is pretty concerning because we know there are things you can do to reduce your risk of cancer, you know, like not smoking or getting regular screenings. These are things you can actually control. But local news focuses on negative stories like all news does. So they'll talk about increasing risk overall or sensational stuff that gets people fearful and anxious. And the information in the stories matters. One study analyzed the content of local news and found that they focus on the causes of cancer but not the prevention. And to add to that, the stories are really fast-paced, so it's hard for viewers to get a nuanced understanding. There's just not enough time to process it. News also tends to focus on dramatic stories, you know, referring to people's cancer treatment as battles, for example, and sometimes creating that sense of fear and helplessness. So maybe this is where selective exposure would come in. If someone's already worried about cancer, they're more likely to watch the news segments for information, even though that news may make them more anxious. It's like a cycle, where selective exposure leads to consuming content that just feeds their fear. And you know we have a term for this on social media, right? Doom scrolling. And so that takes us back to politics. Selective exposure can have both good and bad effects on the way we talk about politics. You know, it's not always bad. Think about how many different news websites there are now, podcasts, YouTube channels, and many of them do cater to specific interests or viewpoints. And if that encourages people to learn about issues they haven't thought about before, that could be a good thing. It could also cause division if they only stay where they agree, and that can lead to less of what researchers call cross-cutting discourse, basically conversations between people who see things differently. If most of your social interactions are on social media, which means you're normal, actually, and you only follow accounts that agree with you, you're less likely to even come across people who disagree. So if maybe you looked at election results and you said, "How can there be so many people who voted this way?" that could be a symptom of your media diet. Researchers suggest that when people mostly see information they agree with, they overestimate how popular their views are. Now, this might be good. It might make people more confident about speaking out, even if their views aren't all that popular. But it also makes people less willing to compromise or consider other points of view. because they assume that people who disagree with them are a minority and you can ignore them. One of the things researchers are really looking into is the connection between selective exposure and agenda diversity, which is the variety of issues and topics that the public is talking about. You know, what's on people's minds. Generally, a diverse agenda is seen as good. It means that important issues are being discussed from all angles and people see a bunch of different viewpoints. And this is important if you have a healthy democracy. But if we think about the echo chamber from the selective exposure, how could that lead to agenda diversity? Well, it's a weird paradox. For individual people, it makes more echo chambers. But for the media landscape overall, if there are a lot of different media sources in order to cater to lots of different types of views, there's more variety out there. With all these different news outlets, websites, podcasts, social media groups, people's ability to come across a wider range of topics and viewpoints is real, even if they choose sources that already align with their beliefs. You can think about it like going to a buffet. Perhaps you really love mac and cheese and that's all you take. But the benefit of a buffet is the whole variety of dishes. Some of them you probably really won't like, but some of them you might if you tried them. And having that buffet, right, that large variety of sources, gives you a chance to try things out. So before we wrap up this deep dive, I want to touch on one more thing, the emotional side of selective exposure. Emotions play a huge role in how you interact with the media, especially for political stuff. When you read or watch something that agrees with you, doesn't it make you feel pretty good? A little smug, perhaps, a little bit of tasty schadenfreude, especially if the thing I disagree with turns out to be wrong. The content I agree with makes me feel positive, validated, excited, like I belong. And those positive feelings make your beliefs stronger, so you're more likely to keep looking for that kind of content. The better you feel, the more you want to stay in your echo chamber. Selective exposure can hijack your emotions and, you know, as we've seen, it can even control your political behavior. And believe me, there are some ways in which this happens accidentally, but there are also places where it happens intentionally. People using these human characteristics to give you information that feels good to you because it controls you. So, how do you make sure your emotions aren't causing the shots? Pay attention to where you're getting your information from. Are your sources mostly giving you information that makes you feel afraid? You can develop resilience to look at things you disagree with, even some of the time, and that will help to develop your critical thinking skills and make you less subject to misinformation. Anything that's just trying to make you feel outraged or scared, take that with a grain of salt and try to look for different perspectives. Stay safe out there, everyone. Thanks for getting Unspun with me this week. Unspun is a production of me, Amanda Sturgill, and is a proud member of the MSW Media family of podcasts. Send me your thoughts and ideas about trickery in the news on Gmail at theunspunpodcast@gmail.com. I even write back. And find this episode's show notes and more information at theunspunpodcast.substack.com. Want to learn more and get smarter? Check out my book, Detecting Deception, Tools to Fight Fake News, which is available on Amazon or your favorite online bookseller. And until next time, stay sharp, everyone. No surprise that newsmakers try to manipulate the audience. They want you to believe that they are the one holding the line and they'll use any trick they can to get you there. But don't let them fool you. Get unspun. I'm Amanda Sturgill. I've been a reporter, and today I teach future reporters to cut the spin and think critically about what newsmakers say. My podcast, Unspun, shows you how to know when you're being manipulated by the news. Learn to spot the tricks and how to make up your own mind about what's true. So if you're tired of being fooled by the news, subscribe to Unspun today. Unspun, because you deserve the truth.